Hi, this is Mike Demeter, and it's my pleasure to be here with renowned strength coach Charles Poliquin as we do our first podcast on the topic of sleep.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Charles. If I could start with the first question, from healing the stressed mom and executive to affecting athletic performance, you've indicated sleep is one of the prime factors in correcting much. Would you care to expand on that?
Very much so. Sleep is, in my opinion, the most underestimated healing tool. I mean, people have gone to get accustomed to the fact that they don't sleep well, and they think that not sleeping well is normal. Not sleeping well is common, but not normal. People should sleep well. And I define sleeping well by putting your head on the pillow, falling asleep, waking up 8 to 9 hours later with no sleep interruption, even to go to the bathroom. Of course, I'm not endorsing peeing in bed. What I'm saying to you is that you need to have uninterrupted sleep. And then when I ask people, you sleep well, they say yes. And I ask them, do you wake up to go to the toilet? Oh, yes. Well, that's not sleeping well. As soon as you're awake for 3 seconds or more, your sleep is considered interrupted. So if you look, for example, at obesity in the U.S., now, according to the Center of Disease Control, it affects 72.6% of the population. Now, if you ask primary care physicians how often people report poor sleeping patterns, it's about 72% of the population. So one can impose the obesity curve on the sleep disorder curve, and they match.
So with this impact in mind, do you have preferred supplements for the different people? Let me differentiate here. Some people can't fall asleep, whereas others can't stay asleep. Would you comment on the difference in fixing this?
There are two different approaches. What you will find is that people are so stressed nowadays that they produce cortisol, or the stress hormone, actually at the wrong time. So these people would be considered having what you call a reversed cortisol curve. So they have a hard time settling down. And then there's people who can actually fall asleep but don't stay asleep. And there's when you wake up in the middle of the night, will tell me actually what's wrong with you. For example, if you wake up, you go to bed at 10 and you wake up, let's say, at 12:30 in the middle of the night, that's a sign that you're not managing your blood sugar properly. So you need to fix the diet. Now, if you wake up between 1 and 3, usually that's a sign of liver toxicity, according to Chinese medicine. But if you verify with Western clinical tests, the data will support that. Now, if you wake up between 3 and 5, that's a telltale sign of oxidative stress. In other words, your body does not have enough antioxidants to be able to stay asleep long enough. In Chinese medicine, that would be the lung meridian. Then if you wake up prematurely and you're not supposed to wake up between 5 and 7, I've only found one remedy for that that actually works. But of course, it depends on your sleeping cycle. For example, if you sleep 8 to 4, and that's your regular sleeping pattern, waking up at 4 for you is normal, so you don't need the remedy that you would give somebody that wakes up between 5 and 7 if they wake up at 8. So that's the general thing. Now, if we were to try to put everybody into the same boat, the most common deficiency that affects sleep quality and quantity is actually magnesium deficiency. Now, depending how you define magnesium deficiency, it's at least 75% of the population. And that's using very low standards. But for most people, once you put them on a magnesium protocol, their sleeping patterns improve. But there's a way to do a proper magnesium protocol. The problem with taking in too much magnesium is how it disrupts the GI tract. So if you take too much, you'll have loose stools or even diarrhea. And if it's the wrong type of magnesium, it's a poor quality one, well, for sure you'll have GI distress.
I'm going to take you back. You had said that people who are waking up at 12:30 have trouble managing their blood sugar. I understand magnesium aids in blood sugar management as one of its attributes.
Yes, that would be true. But often, more often than enough, someone that wakes up prematurely before 1 o'clock has a diet that's not properly balanced in all the macronutrients. So maybe their carbohydrates are too high, or their smart fats are too low, they don't have enough omega-3s, or their protein's content's not high enough. But that's something that a nutritionist can sort out for the person. And we now know from genetics that the ratio of those macronutrients is genetic dependent. So it's actually a $150 test now that people can get, and then it was developed about an hour away from here, and you'll be able to tell what's the optimal ratio between carbs, fats, and proteins that works for you. So it's an individualized thing. So for example, if you're a type of person that requires a lot of carbohydrates and you're on a low-carb protocol, low-carb diets are great if you're suited for a low-carb diet. So if you don't take enough carbohydrates and you're suitable for a high carbohydrate intake, well, it'd be hard for you to make enough serotonin to enjoy your sleep. So that's where the problem comes.
Okay, let me take this off to the side. Many, many of us now have been educated to understand that carbohydrate intake to any excess can present itself as the dreaded love handles. What if one was to have difficulty with carbohydrates this way, but genetically presents that they need carbohydrates for proper sleep patterns?
Well, the thing is that the love handles would be a reflection of a carbohydrate intake that is too high for that person, and also the wrong type of carbohydrates. For example, most Caucasians don't do very well on gluten-containing products, right? Because we have not really adapted to agriculture. So, for example, if you're from Welsh extraction, the odds that you have celiac disease from consuming gluten is about 70%. You know, if you're Norwegian, Dutch extractions, you know, wheat is not your friend. But there's many hidden sources of gluten, for example, soy sauce. So what I recommend often for people who have sleep disorders is to do food intolerances tests, which is called the MRT. And then we look at the foods that bring about inflammation in the body, take those foods away, and people's sleeping patterns improve dramatically.
So inflammation is, in fact, a factor in quality sleep as well?
Well, you know, it will affect at least two meridians in acupuncture, the liver meridian and the lung meridian. So, for example, if you are taking foods that are pro-inflammatory, so, for example, you don't know that you have a food sensitivity to carrots and potatoes and wheat, and your typical dinner is a steak, potatoes, carrots, and a piece of bread, well, three of those foods are pro-inflammatory. So they increase your C-reactive proteins and they increase your cortisol. And it's very hard to fall asleep with high cortisol levels, even though your insulin is rising from eating those carbohydrates. So food sensitivities is often the culprit of poor sleep patterns, but not examined.
So Charles, how would we individualize magnesium intake?
I have found from experience that you get the best results if you combine an oral form of magnesium to a topical form. Why? Because most people's GI tract is not that healthy, and you got to make sure you absorb your magnesium. So when you need to replenish magnesium levels, you need to do it in a way that's not stressful to the GI tract, but you want to do it fairly rapidly because you want to get your health back fast, right? That's usually what people want. So we have different types of oral magnesium. I created a few years ago, that is actually my best-selling product, a product called UberMag. So it's a super magnesium. And what it is, it's four fractions of magnesium, four different chelates. And because they have different tissues affinity, for example, the magnesium orotate will be as an affinity for arteries. Magnesium fumarate as an affinity for the mitochondria's in the cells, and so on. Well, what happens when you have a magnesium that goes to different tissues, the odds that you get a GI tract upset is very low because it's very well absorbed. In fact, it's probably the most favored form of magnesium with practitioners who deal with autistic children, because autistic children, one of their challenges is actually how to absorb magnesium. So that's one thing. But let's say if the client presents with elevated liver enzymes, well, we know that magnesium glycinate is more effective to lower those, because through glycination, which is one of the six ways your liver cleans itself every day, you can dump out a bunch of toxins that are not supposed to be there. Then we have a product called PolyMag PX, which is actually two types of magnesium that alleviate anxiety, and one of them actually helps as a cell energy increaser. And the topical form we use is simply called Topical Mag, so that's an easy one to remember. And what we typically use is two squirts behind each knee about 45 minutes before going to bed. It's so effective that kids who get it administered by their parents, when they see the magnesium bottle, they run away because it means it's bedtime and they know they won't be able to escape the effects of magnesium on their falling asleep process.
Moving from the magnesium, could you comment on the impact of disruptors in the bedroom, things like an electromagnetic field or a light source?
Well, the thing is that our genes in the last 40,000 years have only evolved about 0.02%. So in reality, we are cavemen with cell phones. So we basically learned to sleep in caves, and caves didn't have any artificial lighting. So what I recommend to clients is always to sleep in an environment that is as dark as possible. Now, when I mean dark, I mean completely dark. Well, what about the little red dot on the TV? Well, that's a light, and you should not see it. So I always tell clients to unplug anything electric, and even better, to turn off the breaker that lights up the room. And if they need an emergency light, they could always use a flashlight. And then they set up their blinds and everything else so that the room is pitch dark. And for some reason, if depending on where they live, there's some light coming in, they could always use an eye mask. But the less light they perceive, the better they are. And there's actually a study that showed that the exposure to light while you sleep is one of the risk factors for breast cancer, okay? Because you don't make as much melatonin when there's light in the room. Actually, you can wake up someone by just shining a light on their feet, even though it's far away from the body. So we've been trained to wake up with the sun. So when there's light in the room, it kind of sends off the wrong message. This is actually one of the countries in the European Union, when they arrest you, they put you in a room where you cannot shut off the lights. And in that country, they don't have to ask you questions for 3 days. So they put the room cold enough that you can't take your clothes and cover your eyes because you'll freeze. And after 3 days of not sleeping because of a brightly lit room, you'll admit to have killed JFK. I mean, they get confessions really quick. That's a way to do it in that country, who shall remain less.
Practically speaking, most people still need an alarm clock to get up in the morning. What to do with the clock radio or the digital clock?
Well, the best alternative is actually to take a battery-operated clock. In this way, you don't have to plug it in. And the best type of clock you could buy are what they call natural clocks. What they do is that they usually are pyramid-shaped, probably for marketing purposes more than anything else. But what they do is they emit light gradually. So they mimic basically a sunrise. And those types of alarm clocks are not stressful to the body. Most people wake up with the sound blaring on the radio or some, basically an alarm, and that readily, it makes you secrete adrenaline, which you don't really need to do. So those clocks are sold on most airline catalogs, actually. So next time you take a flight, grab one of those inline catalogs, and then you could buy them off. Or some of them use a variation of light and gradually greater volume music, but the music is quite soothing. So that's what I recommend to clients.
Why is it important to address cortisol when we first get home?
Okay, one of the most common practices that I have my clients do who have problem with falling asleep, we've got to realize that we have 100 times more stress than our grandfathers. So what happens is that the average person, let's say they own a BlackBerry, well, they get email, they get text messages, they get special BlackBerry messages, so they never shut off their attention span. And then, people send you an email and they expect you to answer within a few seconds. So we've basically placed unrealistic demands on each other, and then we're guided by our electronic pieces. And of course, these devices emit radiation, which is not good for us. And we eat poorly, we eat from depleted soils, we watch too much TV, we don't exercise, we sit in cars 2 hours in traffic, you add it up, you know, we're stressed individuals. The thing with cortisol is that cortisol being a stress hormone, the more you build it up, the lower your quantity of sleep. And then it gets to a point where if you're stressed enough, long enough, you don't even make cortisol and you don't even make testosterone. And that's when you get your worst nights of sleep. So when people go home and have elevated cortisol, you know, for example, if you're a grade two teacher, well, just getting kids dressed at the end of the day, besides the teaching, is quite an experience. So what happens, the teacher comes home and then she may have her own kids that she has to pick up from daycare, and then she has all the work associated with coming home and cooking meals and so on. So it is a stressful time coming home from work. And people's cortisol raise again, and you know, we're basically designed to have those cortisol starting to go down at 4 o'clock. So the poor lady who's a mother and works during the day, she comes home, she's all riled up. Well, there are certain supplements that will actually bring cortisol levels down. And by bringing cortisol levels down, they restore to them what we were genetically designed to handle. And when you bring your cortisol down, so we have a product which is actually an old Chinese formula that was developed for an emperor who asked his countrymen to develop for him a herbal formula that would help him deal with the anxiety and the worries associated with ruling an empire. And we have that old Chinese formula. It's called Serenity 2.0. And a lot of our clients, school teachers, police officers, the personal trainers, emergency room and nurses and so on, people who are submitted to a lot of levels of stress during the day and then get home and can't shut off their brains will take that. There's another product we use called Inositol, and we have two variants of it. We've got Uber Inositol and Uber Inositol T, T standing for taurate. So what it is, it's a combination of the nutrient inositol and some form of magnesium. The first form has magnesium glycinate. The second form has magnesium taurate. And if you look online in medical databases, inositol has been used effectively in nutritionally supporting the healing of at least 16 different cognitive disorders, ranging from bipolar disorder to ADHD to OCDC. So basically, there's quite a bit of application nutritionally in healing the brain. And inositol is quite unique because it tends to have adaptogenic properties on resetting neurotransmitters. Let me explain. An adaptogen is a compound that will bring things that are too high, it'll bring them down, and if they're too low, they bring them up. So, for example, if your serotonin is too low and you're depressed, and your dopamine, which is your attention span, neurotransmitter down, it will bring those up. Let's say if your noradrenaline is too high, it will bring it down. So inositol is a great sleep inducer, but the funny thing is it's very cheap and you don't need a whole lot. Usually what I do with clients, I start them at 1 gram only. So that's a fifth of a teaspoon. And we ask them to try it for one night and then ask them if they see a change. If they don't see a change, we titrate the doses up by 1 gram per day. And then they'll get to a point, let's say 5 gram works very well, and they try 6 grams, and at 6 grams, their sleep starts to get disturbed. So everybody's got what you call an inverted U dose response. So you may need 3 grams, and a female who's premenstrual, who's depressed, on a low-carb diet, may need 10 grams, right? So you kind of have to individualize it for the client. But
if I could interject too, many female clients have found it very helpful for food cravings.
Yes, because it resets neurotransmitters. And it's very good for PMS symptoms. Women who have all sorts of emotional issues centering around their PMS state will do very well using inositol. But they must start it after the menses and let it build up for a month, and usually within a month, they see a dramatic drop in all their cognitive premenstrual syndromes.
So let's say my client comes to me and says, I have no money right now for supplements. What are other measures they could take to control cortisol?
One of the most effective ways to control cortisol is what I call the grateful log. The grateful log was taught to me by a book called Are You Ready to Succeed Now? And in the book, he mentioned the concept, and I've used it plenty of times with my clients, and I teach it to all my students. What a grateful log is you buy this book, a journal, basically, nice color, something you enjoy looking at, and a pen of your choice of the color you like. And then every day, when you come home, you write six things you want to do the next day. So you set up goals. And six is plenty. And then what you do is you, for the next paragraph, you write down thank you or I'm grateful for, and then you list all the things that happened to you today that you're grateful for. Because there's a concept that what you appreciate, appreciates. And it could be as innocuous as, for example, I'm grateful for the guy who let me in front of the line when I was taking my flight today. So, you know, just if you... So, and you could write things like, I'm grateful for the new client I got. I'm grateful for the raise I got. I'm grateful for my daughter saying, hey, I love you, Papa. Whatever it is, you write it down. What happens is that when you write these things down, you basically put on a filter of great things, right? And then, as I said, anything you appreciate will appreciate. So the next part of your grateful log, you should say thank you in advance for the things you want to manifest in your life. And I think that's very important. So, for example, you need three more clients to be able to move out of your apartment and make the down payment on the house. So you could write down, I'm grateful for these three new clients who honor my time and my worth, that pay me a fair price, and you go on and describe the type of client you want to attract. And usually it takes, in my experience, less than 3 weeks, and they will manifest themselves. And then if you write down your goals for the next day so you can empty your conscious mind and shift it to your subconscious mind of what you want to accomplish in your life, right? So, for example, if you write down your six goals for the next day, that will go from one memory to the other, and then you won't have to be running that through your mind all night. So that's, you've written it down, you don't have to think about it anymore. So that helps you unload your brain. The second part, where you write down thank you for everything you're grateful, sets up your mind for, well, you know, I've had a great day. And number three, when you write down what the future is going to be like, and you write in a way, it's like if it's happening now, then your positive look on life grows. And I think it's very important with our own children, and I do this routinely with my daughter, and she asks me the question too. Every day before she goes to bed, I ask her three questions, and then she asks me, or she starts first. Doesn't really matter, but I ask her this. Question number one, what did you learn today? And then she may say, I learned how to do long divisions or whatever it is at her age. And then second thing, what did someone do nice for you today? So she may say, my little friend Maddie helped me out with my math problem. And then the third question is, what did you do that was nice for someone today? And she may say, well, I helped out younger kids in grade one on how to learn how to read. Okay, so it doesn't really matter. But what happens is the child goes to bed with a positive outlook on life, and I want my child to believe that the world conspires to help her out, right? And when she goes to bed, she's a happy child. And, you know, mental outlook influences hormones. You know, we believe that the only hormone we could actually influence directly is insulin, because it's our food choices that affect insulin. Well, the thoughts you choose affect your cortisol.
That's terrific. One other idea, that for the person that's not interested in starting off with the supplements, We're told they're yin and yang proteins. Should the sleep challenged be positioning their proteins throughout the day in a specific manner?
Yes. For example, red meats are great for attention span. They contain a lot of tyrosine, which is a great amino acid that helps out raise dopamine, which is basically your neurotransmitter for drive. So if you go on my website, I've got an article called The Meats and Nuts Breakfast, and I explain to you how to be more yang in the morning. So how to eat the right proteins to energize you. Conversely, there are proteins that contain more taurine, which is an amino acid that converts into GABA, which helps with what we call brain rhythm. So for example, as a rule of thumb, white proteins, chicken, fish, turkey, are more yin increasing. And by choosing the right meats at the right time, you can induce sleep much better.
Now, if I understand correctly, always using the same proteins may lead to sensitivities, which we discussed earlier, could lead to inflammation and disrupt the whole cycle. Should we be rotating these proteins?
Yes. The average person 10 years ago would consume on a weekly basis 17 different foods, right? That's not a whole lot. And the statistics for 2010 is down to 7. So, you know, people, especially in the U.S., they'll have beef, they'll have wheat, so they get a cheeseburger. They'll have some cheese, that's number 3. And the rest is probably potatoes. And going back to wheat, they have donuts. So, people's food choices are quite limited. A basic tenet in nutrition is different colors have different nutritional values. For example, we know that pretty much anything that is purple, like say blueberries, help the brain. And anything that's orange helps the skin. So a thing that I do with clients, I always tell them, when you do your grocery shopping, make sure you put in colors you haven't put in a while. And by just varying your colors, you vary your foods, you vary your nutrient intake. You know, one of the main reasons why people lose weight when they go on a quote-unquote diet is just because they change their foods. And that alone helps with better nutrition and it helps them lose weight.
Now, listening to you talk about people chasing the color purple, would this justify red wine to help sleep?
Actually, red wine contains a small amount of melatonin, the hormone that you produce when you sleep. Actually, when I work with menopausal women, the first piece of homework I make them do is actually to drink wine. Now, I'm not saying drink a case of wine, but 1 to 2 glasses of the right types of wine will help you sleep. The best wines for sleep patterns and for prevention of oxidative stress are Pinot and Merlot and all forms of Spanish wines. Any type of Spanish wine is really high and an antioxidant called resveratrol. And resveratrol has wonderful impacts on health. According to Mark Houston from the Hypertension Institute in Nashville, there's about 400 properties to resveratrol in terms of health benefits. I mean, it's a strong antiestrogen. It helps you increase testosterone. It helps repair damage done by oxidative stress. It activates 2 of the genes that we know are linked to longevity. I mean, it's a wonderful nutrient. So, and the nice thing about resveratrol, you don't need a whole lot. 1 capsule a day is plenty.
Okay. Now, the oxidative stress, that was the 3 a.m. wake up, is that correct?
3 to 5.
3 to 5. So for those waking up 3 to 5, this is a way to justify a couple glasses of red wine at night.
Correct. And also, the thing is that we know from studies done on French centenarians, France has the world record for the number of centenarians per capita. And the only thing that they do have in common among all these people who live above the age of 100 is that they drink 6 glasses of red wine a day. Now, for most people who are not very active, that would be a way to put on fat. But 1 or 2 glasses has been shown to be quite effective. And you don't have to take a pill, and you can enjoy it with your evening meal. So with menopausal women, that's my first line of intervention to actually induce sleep.
And I'm sure you don't get many arguments.
No.
On the topic of pills, though, a lot of people come and they're using sleeping pills at the moment, and the idea of dropping it is frightening to them. Would you care to address, though, some of the hazards that come with the use of sleeping pills?
Well, you know, poor sleep is not a sleeping pill deficiency. Okay, so you got to address the problem where it comes from. And I've had many clients drop the use of sleeping pills by doing things like grateful logs and increasing their magnesium. And then they eventually, you know, it's beyond the scope of my practice to tell people to stop using sleeping pills. Legally, I can't do that. But when I start ramping up their magnesium levels, their vitamin D3 levels, their antioxidants levels, and so on, they realize they don't need it. But, you know, one of the things that people do is that they start shaving off bit by bit the quantity of the pill. So they actually take a cheese grater or a knife and chop off a small quantity of the sleeping pill as they gain confidence in the more natural means of inducing sleep.
Right. Now, we've covered quite a bit of different pills and such, but let me throw at you some different ones that are very popular now in the marketplace and get your comments on them. So the use of melatonin, for instance.
The problem with melatonin is that it works short-term but not long-term. And if you are going to use a melatonin product, make sure it's a time-released one. And I prefer to use melatonin more as a emergency solution. For example, you get served divorce papers, the revenue service audit you, and you find out that your 14-year-old daughter is pregnant. Well, that's probably a bit too much to handle for a single day, so melatonin would be in the order. But as a routine product, I don't like it so much. I prefer to use actually melatonin cream, because melatonin cream is used more slowly by the body, induces great sleep. So, but you don't want to do it every day. Shift workers will do better, you know, when they change shifts and they need to sleep at a different time. Then melatonin could be used, but only for the first few days of that switch in shifts.
So make it our Sunday night cream.
Correct, or something like that. Whatever bothers you.
And I know many a stressed executive turns to alcohol. Now, we've said red wine, yay, but alcohol in general for sleep?
No, alcohol has been shown to be a sleep disturber, okay? So if they're going to use some alcohol, like I said, either Pinot, Merlot, or a Spanish wine, but obviously no beer or hard liquor.
Okay. And how about 5-HTP?
5-HTP, I'm not that keen on it. It's great for cutting out carb cravings, but as far as a sleep inducer, I don't think it suits all genotypes. Some people have great results with it, but as opposed to, let's say, investing in the right magnesium. So if your budget is limited, I'd prefer to use magnesium than 5-HTP to induce sleep.
Kava-kava?
Kava-kava recently got a bad reputation, and if you look at the research, it was poorly done. So I'm not anti-kava-kava. Kava-kava is, you know, had the false reputation that it's hard on liver enzymes. And it's not. If it's properly made, it's not a problem. But it would be more for someone who has really high anxiety and cannot sleep, you know.
Okay, so for the anxious lot, I know a lot of them will turn to straight GABA.
Well, GABA would be a waste of time, because GABA is not GABA once it's in the GI tract. So the amino acid taurine will convert into GABA in the body. So, for example, when we're talking about yin protein, lobster is the richest source of taurine you could find. So lobster or scallops, any seafood tends to be high in taurine. So they would be classified as yin proteins to help induce sleep.
So for the GABA challenge, a lobster dinner, and that night Uber in a Cytal with the magnesium taurate?
That will knock them out.
So how about the 40-plus male that's suffering from prostate issues? What would you do to help them with their nighttime wake-ups?
Well, any antioxidants that deal with estrogens will help out. For example, sulforaphane, which is extracted from the cauliflower type of family, like broccoli, is very effective at reducing prostate symptoms.
Now, can they get this from cruciferous vegetables alone, or it's better as an extract?
As an extract, 30 milligrams a day will do the job. So, you know, how many times have you had people tell you, oh, Mike, you know, last night I just couldn't stop eating broccoli. So, you know, okay. So it's not going to And then the thing is, most people have too low of stomach acid to actually be able to extract the antiestrogens that are cleaved inside the fibrous structures of the broccoli. So most people find that the investment of a 30 milligram pill will do quite well for them. But you got to realize that a lot of the prostate inflammation could actually be due also to a B9, a B6, and a B12 deficiency. So taking a really well-designed multivitamin will help with that. Prostate problems, you know, people think it's a testosterone issue. It's actually an estrogen issue. I mean, men were not made to have rampant estrogens. Now, a guy who has prostatitis and cannot fall asleep because he has to go pee multiple times, sometimes something as innocuous as their moisturizers could be the cause. Their moisturizers could be containing this substance called parabens. Parabens have multiple forms. It could be methyl paraben, ethyl paraben, whatever type of paraben you're taking. You're taking basically a foreign estrogen, and those substances are known to actually lower testosterone. So if you take something that is estrogenic and testosterone lowering, in double trouble. So there's a website called EWG.org, and they will rank and analyze all your skin lotion. So what you do is you go on that website and look it up, and then you could put in the type of stuff you use, and it will tell you how good it is for you or how bad it is. And that website ranks all products available in the market. So you'll actually be able to search it for the best options as well.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that cosmetic database. Beyond that, I understand that soy used in cosmetics is presenting itself as organic, but it can be a source of estrogens as well.
Yeah, and you know, because of the saturated fat phobia that's rampant, people have things like soy latte. Okay, well, soy latte, unless you're interested in having larger nipples, I mean, I think it's quite a waste of time, especially if you're Caucasian. So, you know, it's been shown that soy in males, especially Caucasian males, decreases testosterone, okay, and increases estrogen. So you have a double trouble with soy consumption. But, you know, soy is everywhere. And, for example, people say, oh, I need a healthy snack, and I'm going to have this protein bar. Well, read the label. It could be a soy protein isolate. And then soy-containing products are too rich in manganese. Manganese is a great mineral for your ligaments and your tendons. But if you exceed 7 milligrams a day of manganese, it's actually neurotoxic. And most soy products are actually fermented in manganese vats. So people who consume soy protein on a daily basis and use tofu and all these processed forms of soy proteins are ingesting quite a bit of manganese. In fact, there's research that shows that ADD could be linked to infant formulas based on soy proteins. It's actually the manganese in the soy protein that fried the kid's brain.
That's covered in the whole soy story, isn't it?
Yes, that's probably one of the best books you could ever read on the evils of soy. Soy is extremely well marketed. And what I find in practice is the more educated the client is, as far as like schooling, the more likely they've fallen prey to using soy.
Okay, now, we've just covered men and prostate issues, but what of the female awakened from cramping or hot flashes during the night?
Menopausal clients present for consultations. The main topic we first discuss is always sleep. Sleep is a huge issue in menopausal females, and they basically are told, well, you're going through menopause, it's normal, you're not going to sleep, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's quite a bit of hogwash. For example, hot flashes. If you look at the research, if you take the right type of vitamin E, hot flashes disappear. If you could put that into your mind, vitamin E is the antioxidant for the uterus. So we are submitted to a lot of oxidative stress throughout the day. So a typical menopausal female, let's say, drives, goes downtown, exposed to fumes. I mean, the average American detoxifies over 500 chemicals a day. So we do have a lot of oxidative stress. Well, that stress is going to go somewhere. And at menopause, the uterus is already being stressed out. So when you give the gamma delta tocopherol form of vitamin E, you reduce the oxidative stress on that tissue. And women instantly, pretty much, get rid of their hot flashes. Now, that's one way you could assess it. Harvard University developed an enzyme that is actually extracted from rhubarb. And we do carry that product. It's called Rhubarb PX. And it's a double whammy as far as population because we actually give it to men who suffer from prostate problems. But in females, it actually eliminates pretty much every symptom associated with menopause. And then if she handles her menopause symptoms much better, then she can sleep deeper. And if she sleeps deeper, she can regenerate faster. And if she regenerates faster, she's a much happier woman. I mean, menopausal symptoms are common, but not normal. A woman that is healthy should go through menopause without actually feeling it, outside of the fact that she's menstruating less and less often, and then those menses disappear. So I have many clients who've actually gone through menopause and go see their doctors and say, well, when are these symptoms going to come by? And the guy or the female doctor will say, listen, you've gone through menopause. And, you know, that's usually when I get a call from that doctor wanting to know why I did it. So menopause should be symptom-free. It's a myth that you're supposed to be having all these symptoms.
Okay, and now we have a very mixed audience, and we've covered stressed executives and menopausal women, but we also have athletes that tune in. And many of the fitness magazines refer to an anabolic PM muscle growth formula. What at nighttime would hold merit for the athlete trying to gain more mass?
The anabolic drink before bed or the anabolic drink during sleep, in my opinion, is just one of those line extension strategies. And you're trying to get the client to buy more stuff. I really am not a big fan of these drinks. One, casein is usually the protein they recommend. Well, if you have any experience with food intolerances, casein is one of the most commonly intolerant that we see. So let's say the guy is tolerant to casein, that's not so much of a problem. But as far as waking up in the middle of the night, setting an alarm clock, wake up, take a protein drink, well, if that were true, the protein drink would have to be freshly made. So if you make one and leave it for 6 hours in the fridge, wake up at 4 in the morning, take a sip, go back to bed. Well, pretty much proteins are really hard to maintain their structures when they're in suspension. Usually after 1 hour, they start to denature. So you're basically drinking a crap quality protein at 4 in the morning. Plus, you've disrupted your natural sleep patterns. So in my opinion, the athlete should concentrate more on achieving the deepest quality sleep and, of course, match the quantity. So 8 to 9 hours of deep quality sleep is far more anabolic than waking up at 4 in the morning to have a protein shake.
And if an athlete can't get that much sleep time, how about the idea of naps?
Naps, if you're, for some reason, can only sleep 6 hours and then you have to take a nap during the day, that's a least worse option. But you got to go back to the question, why can't you get 8 to 9 hours? Well, maybe because you're spending all your time on the internet. You know, it's not, so the thing always goes back to, what's more important to you, go to the Olympics or be on Facebook? In my opinion, the athlete should prioritize what's important to them. And then the other thing, too, is that if they're not training hard enough, then that's probably why they don't need that much sleep. So if they train hard, they should be needing 8 to 9 hours in a row. And on top of that, having a nap would not be a bad idea. So at the Olympic level, I think the athlete should have, let's say, go to bed at 10, wake up at 7 in the morning, train twice, and have a nap in between those two workouts. I think that's when people, from my experience, make the most progress.
Okay, so we've covered just about every demographic possible. Ultimately, Could we outline an ideal day's eating and supplement regime for an optimal sleep pattern as you see it?
Well, first of all, it's kind of a paradox. If you have energy earlier during the day, you should sleep better. So when you wake up in the morning, you want to raise two neurotransmitters, dopamine and acetylcholine. And as I say in my seminars, the first thing you put in your mouth in the morning, provided it's food, will dictate all your neurotransmitters for the day. So, you know, when people get up in the morning, they should usually have some form of meat or fish, some nuts, and some berries if they're lean enough and they deserve those carbohydrates. And as the day advances, they switch to more rapidly digesting proteins like fish and then increase their carbohydrate intake. A lot of bodybuilding coaches recommend high carbohydrate intake at breakfast, and I think that's a big mistake.
So you mean like the oatmeal and egg white group?
Yeah, oatmeal, egg white, and a banana. Well, what happens is that you get egg white is very fast digested protein. There's not enough fats in it for sustenance. Oatmeal is digested fairly fast, and then you get your banana that will jack up your glycemic index. So basically, you're eating a serotonin-inducing breakfast. Yeah, you'll be happy, but you want to go to bed. So it's the wrong type of food. But as the day goes by, you should actually gradually increase the proportion of carbohydrates without neglecting your protein and fats. So that takes care of the diet. Now, one thing I like to do is post-workout is to take about 300 milligrams of magnesium. Why? Because it brings down your catecholamines, so you make less cortisol and you go back to homeostasis much more rapidly. So that takes care of 300-400 milligrams of magnesium.
Is there a preferred form of magnesium post-workout?
Actually, I prefer to use a blend. For example, the Uber Mag, which has four types of magnesium. And then at the last two meals of the day, I recommend to take more magnesium. And then Dr. Houston and I are in agreement that most people will need about 2,000 milligrams a day of supplemental magnesium to achieve optimal health. Now, we're talking 2,000 milligrams for a 90-kilo person or a 200-pound male. Females will do very well at 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams a day.
Now, I'm sorry, is this supplemental or supplement plus diet?
No, supplemental. Because the problem is that because of the types of soil we have nowadays, magnesium in so-called magnesium-rich foods is not that present anymore. Same thing for zinc. So we take in magnesium at the last two meals of the day, oral form. Now, depending on the client's personal issues, let's say if they got more of liver detoxification issues, then we may use glycinate. If the person has poor brain balance, we may give them taurate. And then 45 minutes before they go to bed, they use a topical magnesium. And that will ensure that magnesium is not a limiting factor in sleep health. Then, of course, there's other nutritional strategies. Usually I prefer to use herbs like Serenity, or if the person has problems with muscle tension, we have a formula called Tranquilo. And if they've got more of a cognitive issues like OCDC or if they got ADHD, then I will, instead of taking Serenity, I will say take some inositol. So they could use either uberinositol or uberinositol T. T standing for taurate, and that's for people who have a lot of problems with brain balance, while the regular one would help more with liver issues. And that would suffice as far as supplements to bring it down. Now, if cortisol is really elevated, let's say you have a deadline or you're a stockbroker and stock market's not going well today, then one of the preferred ingredients to lower cortisol would be vitamin C. Very cheap, easy to dose, and then that would help out a lot.
The dosage and timing?
Vitamin C, most people will need about 3 grams a day nowadays because of the levels of stress. But if they're very stressed for a short time, I don't hesitate to bring it up to 10 grams in divided dosage throughout the day. There's a very quick warning that you're taking too much vitamin C, and that's basically loose stools. So if you get to the point where you have loose stools, then you just back off a gram or two. But if you titrate it up slowly, you'll be able to figure out what's your optimal dosage. And then because vitamin C is an antioxidant, that later on will affect how well you sleep between 3 and 5 in the morning. Now, there's little things you could do to tweak it. So, for example, if you're a male and you need a bra. Well, then I would take something like Uber sulforaphane or the polyestro detox, which is an antioxidant that also addresses your estrogen. Or if you're a female going through menopause, I may put you on resveratrol PX, which is a very highly concentrated form of trans resveratrol. So when you talk about supplements and sleep, you could actually customize your approach so that you induce sleep properly. If it's a child that's 12 years old and he worries about exams and whatever, well, inositol would be the best alternative. So, you know, especially if the kid has a hard time swallowing pills, well, inositol is a powder. So that helps out. You know, and then topical magnesium, you don't have to swallow it. So you just put it on the forearms or behind the knees or on your feet, and the child can fall asleep. So the important thing is that if you listen to the podcast, I've given you many different options. And then using the information we presented in the previous minutes, you could customize your plan, Mike.
I think that puts it together nicely. Thank you so much for your time.
And you're more than welcome, Mike.
You have been listening to the Poliquin podcast series. The supplements and dosages stated in this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Consult with your healthcare practitioner prior to any use. To purchase or learn more about the products, books, and websites referenced in this podcast, please visit our website at www.charlespoliquin.com. Click on Articles and Multimedia, then References and Links. To purchase Poliquin supplements in our U.S. or European stores, please go to www.charlespoliquin.com and click Shop Online. This podcast is copyright property of Poliquin Performance LLC 2, all rights reserved. Reproduction or replication in any form by any means, not limited to electronic versions or taping, without written permission of Poliquin Performance LLC 2 is illegal. Violators will be prosecuted.